Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey. The new Screensavers is brought to you by Prosper. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace that connects people who are looking to borrow money with those with money to lend. Visit prosper.com/NSS to apply for a loan now. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a landing page or beautiful website for your portfolio, blog, business, or online store. Enter the offer code NSS and get 10% off. Squarespace. Should.
A computer for all corners of the world, a fresh slice of Raspberry Pi, and we make a case for the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine. Live from the Twit Brick House in beautiful downtown Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers.
Screensavers, episode 43 for Saturday, March 5th, 2016. I'm Leo Laporte.
I'm Father Robert Ballo, sir.
Back from Spain, from Barcelona.
Where there was a lot of ham.
Jamón. Love the jamón. Hey, thanks for, is it John?
Yes.
From Cincinnati. What a...
That voice is unreal.
Amazing. From Cincinnati, Ohio, for doing our show open for us today. And welcome to all of you. This is going to be a good show. We have a lot of material get to. We're going to do some stuff from Barcelona you brought back. We're going to continue our build of the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine. Ryan Schratt will be back to do that and answer some of your questions, too, because we do all of that. And I shouldn't bury the lead. The thing everybody's waiting for, the first look at the new Raspberry Pi 3.
Yes, and we had it before it was released, so we got to play with it. And it's a nice machine.
I'm really jealous.
A nice little gadget.
You know how I knew they were going to do that? Because I just bought two Raspberry Pi 2s. Literally, like 2 weeks ago.
So. We stocked up for the no-hole, and we got a bunch of 1s and 2s, and now we have to get 3s, and we're just going to wait.
The good news is they're $35.
Exactly.
So, anyway, we'll talk about that. I want to show you what I got in the mail today. Actually, a week ago on Monday. Look at that. Is that not the most beautiful phone ever? You saw this in Barcelona.
That was the one device I would like to have walked away from Barcelona with.
Galaxy S7. I bought the gold one, which looks kind of like a bar of gold, doesn't it?
It does,
yeah. It's kind of beautiful. I'm smitten. It's a very lovely phone. This is the always-on feature, which I do like. Battery life has been very good so far, although I haven't really had a complete time to test it because we traveled, so we were in bad cell signals and stuff. It still does the weird thing that Samsung does, which is the physical home key. Mm-hmm. They've reversed the Android buttons. I'm doing it upside down, so the fingerprint readings might not be super... It's pretty fast.
There it goes.
And boy, what a gorgeous screen. Now, I immediately took TouchWiz off as the launcher. I'm using Nova Launcher, but it is about as gorgeous a screen as you can get. And the edge means there's no bezels. I mean, it just goes right around the edge, which is, by the way, why I'm ordering a case, because it's very hard to hold this phone without touching the screen. On the other hand, man, is it snappy. With 4 gigs of RAM and that new Snapdragon 820 processor, it really feels
fast.
You know, we felt like they did this right because they had a really good design in the S6 Edge. They didn't really need to change it. They just needed to up the specs, tweak the software, and I think they've done that. But I've got a question for you, Leo.
Yeah.
Because we had both the S7 and the S7 Edge right next to each other at the booth.
Yeah.
And Carson asked, who would go for the S7? Who wouldn't want the Edge?
I think there's one argument against the S7 Edge is this Edge, by the way, you had your eyes closed. Sorry.
Oh.
is that this Edge goes all the way around and is, as I said, hard sometimes to you touch it by accident. And the thing is so snappy that it's very easy to get stray touches. Mm-hmm. And I turned off the Edge features, the slide-in thing. I don't really understand that. So you know what? You'd do as well with the S7. But the S7 Edge has a bigger battery, considerably bigger, like 600 milliamp hours bigger. And so that's for that reason alone, I think it's worth getting. It does support SD card now, which is good, up to 200 gigabytes. But they didn't do that, the new Marshmallow Android 6.0, adopting the memory into the base storage. And the base storage of this is ridiculous. It's only 32 gigabytes. It would have been nice if I put a 228 gigabyte card. It would have been nice if it would merge those so it looks like it's a giant phone.
Right.
Because some apps, like my Audible app, I want to put the books on the SD card, but I can't.
Really?
Well, not if I want it to be a widget. You know, you have to move the app as well as the data and with the Audible app. The Audible app used to let you put books on the SD card. They stopped. I don't know why. So that's my biggest, you know, but I did put 3 or 4 gigs of music on here on the SD card. I haven't filled up the phone. There's plenty of room in it. The battery life has been excellent. The camera's fantastic.
I've been wanting an Android phone that had a camera to die for.
This is better than the iPhone camera. I think there's no question. F1.7, which means it's very fast. They reduced it from 16 megapixels to 12.
And the focusing time is fantastic.
It's super fast. Everything's super fast in this. Look at the fingerprints, though. This thing is a fingerprint magnet. No scratches yet, though, although I've seen people smash this. I think there's some sort of coating on this that smashes, like a very thick varnish that smashes. But it's hard to scratch. I don't know. I think that's the most lovely phone ever. I really do. And I know gold is kind of silly, and they have other colors. But Icon has opulence, right?
They had other devices at the Samsung booth that were interesting. Their VR products were nice, but it was really the S7 and the S7 Edge. That's what everyone wanted to get their hands on.
This, if you're buying a high-end phone, it's this and the iPhone. Those are the choices. This is the same size screen as an iPhone 6S Plus, but because of there's no bezels on the side, it feels like a kind of a normal, smallish phone. It doesn't feel like a giant phone. I really like it.
Although I am with you in that as these phones get thinner and thinner and lighter, it's harder to cup it. I like to cup my phone and have it held in my hand. I always feel like I'm going to flip it out of my hands if I squeeze too hard.
There's hardly any edge metal edge on this thing. You can barely hold it because a lot of that's screen. Nevertheless, these are all minuscule picks. If you want an Android phone, this is easily the nicest one.
Absolutely.
I haven't seen the G5 yet. Nobody has.
We saw
LG. You saw it, but nobody's got it yet.
No one's got it, but I mean, we were able to take it apart. We were able to pull out the little module.
What do you think?
The promise is there. The phone is decent. It's not nearly as nice as the S7 or the S7 Edge, but that idea of being able to pull out a module and maybe plug in the audio or the camera module. There was actually one vendor there that was already developing a module for putting multiple HDMI inputs.
Oh,
so you could actually have your phone streaming to Twitch and switch between cameras.
Oh, that's interesting.
If you're a podcaster, that would be perfect. That is your phone.
Yeah. We're kind of at the stage now in these phones where there's not going to be massive improvements, but there might be interesting wrinkles. That's a very interesting wrinkle. I have a new friend, a new little friend, and he's always in my pocket.
Jason has been coveting your phone.
Yeah. I can't believe I got it on Monday. I ordered it from T-Mobile the day they put it on pre-order, and I got it 2 days later.
They learned.
Well, there's still a journalist who are embargoed, which is kind of funny.
Sorry.
There you go. Hey, other news. Amazon, there's two stories. Earlier this week, we heard Amazon was taking encryption off of its Fire tablets.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're putting it back.
Weird story. So if you wanted to upgrade your Fire tablet to OS 5, you got a warning saying, this no longer supports encryption. We're deprecating encryption support. So it gave you instructions on how to decrypt all your data so that it could be readable in OS 5. Now, it also said, if you want to keep encryption, you can stay with OS 4, but then you lose all the updates. Amazon got a flurry of really angry comments, tweets, emails, people losing their mind. And their first response was to say, well, nobody was using it.
Right.
In fact, their official press release said this was an enterprise feature. And this is really not an enterprise device, so we don't understand why it should be there. And I guess they've now bowed to the pressure, and they've said, we're going to put it back in. Wait a couple of weeks. We'll get encryption support back into OS 5. My take on it is I like the idea of having the encryption. I have a Fire tablet. When I turned on encryption, it took a major hit. Performance was horrible because there wasn't a lot of performance to start off with. And the other part is it's buried. You really have to search for it to turn it on. So that's probably the reason why not a lot of people were using it. They didn't even know it was there.
I find the positive thing from this story to me is that this Apple versus DOJ case has really brought in this notion of encryption to the fore. People are now aware of it to the point where they could actually respond to Amazon and say, put our encryption back. That, to me, is a very positive thing to take out of all of this.
And if you think back to the beginning of this week, you know, to Monday and then Tuesday when you had the vice president of Apple over in front of Congress talking to them about encryption, one of the takeaways was he said, look, we want to help you. We want to support law enforcement. We want to support the fight against terrorism. But you, as our legislators, you need to have this conversation now because we're using a 200-year-old statute to figure out how we deal with things in the digital world. That's just irresponsible.
Right.
And I think, maybe this is what we needed to spark the public into saying, what is the good policy on
that? I'd slightly reframe that. I think that 200-year-old statute, the All Writs statute, has been widely used by courts for a variety of things. Really, the question is, should courts be deciding this or should the Congress be deciding this? And I agree with Thomas Sowell, who's the chief counsel and vice president at Apple, that the courts aren't the right venue for this. Ultimately, Congress has to step forward and say, and we have to be, you know, party to this, should there be strong encryption? Should there be an area that law enforcement can't get into or not?
Right.
And I think that's a worthy debate. I don't know what the right answer is.
And that's actually, I think everyone needs to be there. Too many people are knee-jerking onto one side or the other. The right response is we need to learn about this. Yeah. What are the issues involved here? Because, yes, there are my constitutional rights. Yes, there is law enforcement. Yes, there is my right to privacy. Yes, there is also my right to support the security of my fellow citizens. So where are we going to land? And I like that we're having this conversation.
Absolutely. I mean, technology introduces new things all the time, and we need to deal with how they change society, including something we never had before, which is, A, a device that knows everything about you, and, B, encryption. Those two things didn't exist even 20 years ago. Forget 1789. In other news stories, Meerkat is pivoting. That's kind of sad. Meerkat was the darling 1 year ago of South by Southwest. I talked to Ben Rubin at the time. It was huge, but it was interesting. It never became number one on the App Store. It was one of those things that tech elite people, broadcasters, celebrities like to use to do live streaming. Twitter, of course, had its own version of the same thing, Periscope. I think you can declare Periscope the winner.
Yes.
Facebook has live video now, too. In all cases, I don't think very many people use any of that stuff. And Meerkat says, we're going to try some different stuff. We're going to try it for social and other things. But the idea of updating that Meerkat live streaming product, we haven't done that in a month, and we're probably not going to do that.
Yeah, I think the takeaway from that is that is a great feature, but it's not a sustainable product by itself.
And if Twitter does it and Facebook does it, where's the space for Meerkat to exist? Finally, Palmer Luckey asked, he's the founder of Oculus, the genius behind the Oculus VR helmet. He was asked, when are you going to make, it's for Windows only, when are you going to make this for Apple?
And he said, well, as soon as Apple makes a good computer.
No! Burn! Oh! Burn! But it's true, the base model, the minimum specs for Oculus Rift, not even the top of the line Mac Pro can handle it. Even that top-of-the-line Mac Pro with dual AMD video cards is fast enough to run your Oculus Rift games on. So he's saying Apple used to pay a lot of attention to GPUs. They don't anymore. So that's why you're not going to be able to run the Oculus Rift. They'll have to update their hardware.
And to be fair, I mean, the desktop segment, the performance desktop segment for Apple.
It's gamers.
It's gamers, and it's such a low percentage of their profit every year.
If you're a gamer, you don't buy a Mac.
You don't buy a Mac. No. And so why would they put the effort into it?
You're going to see we're putting some effort into our ultimate virtual reality game machine. You're going to see our update there in just a little bit. But I think we're ready for a call for help, are you?
I think so, yeah.
Let's do it. From Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, Ed is on the line. Hello, Ed.
Hello.
How are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Do you ever join us on Call for Help in Canada on the G4 Tech TV?
I did way back when you were in Vancouver. I called in once there where we had to use the old telephone and Skype would jerk around every couple seconds. Yeah, I remember that.
That was cutting edge back then.
We've moved along with the times a little bit now.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do for you?
Well, I've got a Google Nexus 5, and I had a Nexus 4 as well.
Yeah.
And buried in the settings is you can encrypt the phone. And now all this talk of encryption, the question is there, is it worth doing? Is it something that I should actually consider? Or I guess so, to encrypt or not to encrypt is the question.
It's a great question. Android has this built in. In fact, I was just about to check the Samsung. I'm sure it is. It's in the settings. You do have to give it you can't just use a 4-digit passcode. You have to give it a real password. So problem number one with encryption is starting up your phone requires you to enter a password. I actually do that anyway. I think that's a good thing. Google's turned this feature on starting with the Nexus 6, Shamu. Remember that? The 6-inch Nexus. They have continued in the default turning on encryption with both the 5X and the 6P. You don't actually have a choice. But, of course, the 5, it wasn't in there. There's the encrypt phone.
Yeah, this setting. Is Cyanogen mod, so this does have it.
Oh, that's very different. Yeah. So it's on by default in the three most recent Nexus phones, not on yours. The couple of the negatives are, of course, the startup is a little bit more painful because you have to give it but you would want that. If you're going to encrypt, that's one of the problems with Apple's encryption scheme is the front door is weak. 4-digit passcode, come on. Anybody can guess that, given enough times to try it. So it's reasonable that they should ask for a full passcode. But there's other reasons not to do it.
There are. So, I mean, it's nice to have encryption. I like the idea of encryption. But when you're looking at it on Android, you have to remember a few things. First, Google's official policy on the encryption is it should be offered as a default as long as it doesn't create a hit on performance. And right now, there are less than 2% of the handsets on the market that can do that. Most of them, you'll take a sizable hit. In fact, I tried turning it on my OnePlus One, and I took it off. It was too much of a drag. I noticed it not just on boot up, but loading apps, accessing my calendar, accessing my email. So it is going to be a sizable hit to your performance. The other thing about it is, if you think about what you use your phone for, once you start doing encryption, you have to have encryption everywhere. For example, everything I have on my phone is backed up to the cloud. If you have it backed up to the cloud as well, you need to make sure that all your cloud storage, all your cloud providers are also encrypted. Otherwise, you've just created an encryption on one side that doesn't extend anywhere else. So it's not just a feature you turn on. It's a way of thinking that you have to apply to your entire digital life. And if you're not willing to do that, then don't take the performance hit.
I actually think Android's story is a little bit better with encryption than Apple's story. Apple decided to encrypt by default on all of its iPhones for the last couple of years. But what we've learned from this Apple DOJ thing is that your iCloud backup, while encrypted, the keys are owned by Apple.
Right.
Apple can unencrypt and, in fact, routinely does for law enforcement. In fact, one of Apple's complaints was, dudes, if you had just given us that phone or talked to us before you changed the password, we could have brought the phone to a safe place where a known Wi-Fi, it would have backed up to iCloud, and we could have given you all the data. That was a little bit of a negative revelation to me, and it's exactly as you say. If you're going to encrypt the phone, it behooves you then to have encrypted backup, encrypted storage everywhere, and you're going to have to make sure that that is the case. It isn't the case on Apple. Now, the good news is there is no default backup system for Android. Google will back up, and you should probably turn this off if you want to have an encrypted phone. Mm-hmm. They will back up your settings, but they don't back up your data. And they'll back up the names of your apps, but not the apps themselves. If you're using Titanium or some other backup system, make sure that that's encrypted and stored somewhere that you control with keys that only you know. You know what? I'm trying to think. I'm pretty sure this S7 is encrypted by default with Samsung's Knox.
Yes.
Encryption technology. And Knox is hardware supported, is a very strong encryption. I don't really care. I'll be honest with you. I think if it's inconvenient, it's a big hit, just don't put your secret plans for world domination on your smartphone. You know? I think we're making a big deal out of this.
I'm the same way. I look at the data that I absolutely need to protect. And my policy is not to try to protect it with layers of encryption. My policy is to make sure it never gets into a place where someone might be able to try to crack
and
the encryption.
And the worst possible place to put it would be on a smartphone.
I don't. It. Yeah, don't. It would be like putting your life on a USB drive and then leaving it on a park bench. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
And then getting mad because the park bench isn't encrypted. What are you talking about? So, we all have the right to privacy. It's a reasonable thing to expect. I don't know what the laws are in Canada, but I think that they're probably very similar to the laws in the U.S. You should have the right to privacy. But it's a lot to ask to be able to take something out of the house that is connected at all times to the Internet, that has a camera and a microphone built into it, and expect to preserve your privacy. That's a lot to ask.
I don't know, Leo. I really want my pictures encrypted so that I can post them onto Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
Yeah. So there are negatives to encrypting, but it is doable. That phone is old enough that you would probably see a performance hit that's significant. You know, if it's bad on the 5X and the 6P, and you can see the benchmarks on a non-detect and other places, then imagine what it's going to be on the 5.
Yeah. You know, try it. Back up all your data. And then go ahead and enable encryption, and you'll use it for about a day, and then you're going to disable encryption.
I
can almost guarantee you.
Yeah.
A lot of people won't notice the difference because, for instance, you don't know that the Nexus 6, the successor to yours, was supposed to be this fast. You might have said, well, that feels a little sluggish. You don't know how fast it's supposed to be. And since it came encrypted, you never really knew unless you went through a very elaborate process to remove encryption from that phone. I'd say don't do it. Just remember, you're carrying around a phone the reason Apple started encrypting is because law enforcement used to have a device that would routinely connect to the USB port. They'd suck all the data out of your phone. And that was something that really bothered Apple. They didn't like it that the law enforcement could do that. Law enforcement doesn't like it that Apple all of a sudden took away that capability and said, oh, now we're going to encrypt. So there's a real battle going on. It's a complicated battle. You know, we've never in the past, law enforcement never in the past had to deal with this idea of, you know, we have a search warrant, we have a court order, we have probable cause, we think, you know, you're a real suspect and we can't search your apartment. That they've never had to deal with that. And I understand their concerns about all that. The good news is even the director of national security in the United States says, don't worry, there's plenty of ways we can spy on you.
We got it covered.
We got Internet of Things, baby. We're going to have microphones in your house. You know, it's all fine.
I don't need to
it's
hear
all
this.
Fine. So, I don't know. What do you think, Ed? Why would you want to encrypt?
It was just an idea that came to mind.
It just seemed like a good idea.
But I thought, you know, before I do it, I better talk to somebody that knows a little more about this stuff, because I sort of assumed that it would take a little bit of a performance hit in doing it. It would have to, because it's going to all be processor-based as far as you would think.
Yes, it's not
hardware-based.
Anyway, yeah, not hardware-based. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You should worry about security. You should be careful about what you install on your phone. You should, you know, pay attention to stuff like that. You don't want a hacker to put a Trojan on your phone because they would have access to everything, even if you were encrypted, by the way. So that's important. Worry about that. That's much more important than whether your phone's encrypted, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm using an 8-digit passcode to log
Good.
Into it, so I'm assuming that's lots anyway.
Yeah, that's great. And don't download weird software. Get that Russian wallpaper app. You know, or whatever. Be careful.
But the pictures are so beautiful.
I know. Be careful about what
irresistible
about what you put on there. Hey, thanks for the call. I think it's a great question.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it. It's good to
see you again.
Chat with you again after all these years.
Very nice. Thank you, Ed. I appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah. I think one of the things I like about fingerprint recognition on all phones, or almost all phones now, is it is a good way to kind of routinely secure your phone. But we don't know how secure that is. Even.
Well, that's the other thing.
Wasn't there a guy in Barcelona that used Play-Doh to open an iPhone?
Yes. And also, remember, law enforcement can compel you to put your finger on a fingerprint scanner. That is absolutely within their right. They cannot compel you to unlock your phone if you say, I forgot it.
Right. I'm not that worried about law enforcement.
No.
I'm a middle-aged white guy. What do I have to worry about?
I keep all my plans for world domination on an offline server.
That's probably a better idea.
I'm good. Yeah. I'm good.
If you want to... who's on the show next week? Who's my co-host next week?
Liberty Madison.
Oh, wow. Liberty cool. Madison. Nice. That tech girl. So she's an expert on social media and self-promotion. And if you have a question you want to ask Liberty or me, here's how you do it.
Need tech help? The new Screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
I am so excited. We're going to take a look at the Raspberry Pi 3, but also a $79 computer designed for the developing world. It's called the Endless Computer. But first, I want to talk a little bit about building your nest egg. Prosper.com. Prosper is a peer-to-peer lending marketplace. That means Prosper brings together people with money to lend with people who need to borrow. Now, in the past, we've really focused on Prosper as a place to borrow money, and I want to encourage you to take a look at that. These are great loans, fixed low-interest rate loans that you can get right away. But it's also a great place to invest, and I think you should take a look at that as well. Prosper is, as I said, a place that brings people together, people who have money to lend, people who need to borrow money. I'll tell you what, if you are stuck right now with high-interest rate credit cards, you want to pay those off, and you want to pay them off at a low fixed rate, you can do it at Prosper. It's like the Uber or Airbnb for borrowing money. Up to $35,000 as quickly as 5 days for just about anything you want. Pay off the credit cards for sure, but you could also fix up the house, plan a vacation. It's your money to do with what you want. It's a better way to get cash. You need a low interest rate. Check your low interest rate instantly. You will not affect your credit. Go to prosper.com/NSS. It's a simple form. You can find out exactly how much you can borrow and how much it would cost. Up to $35,000 in your account in as few as 5 days. Prosper.com/NSS. And it is widely considered to be a great place to invest as well. I think you should take a look at it for that as well. So Father Robert was in Barcelona. He was at Mobile World Congress. I am jealous. What a great city, one of the world's great cities, and what a great conference. He says it was a great event. While he was there, he talked to a guy named Ruben Baron from Endless Computing about building a computer for the next billion. Take it away, Father.
Ruben, you introduced me to this. This is the Endless Mini. It's a way for people who maybe don't have access to the internet, maybe don't have a whole lot of resources to spend, and maybe don't have a way to learn about the world at large that the rest of us talk about, for them to participate. Tell me about why you created this device.
Matt Daly, our CEO, was traveling in the India and Bangladesh, China and all that, and he said, how come these people don't have computers, don't have access to computers? Knowledge is everything. You want to develop, you need to have knowledge. So he said, well, they have smartphones and they have TVs. But then we figured out the smartphone is not powerful enough. So that's what this idea came about. But it's not more than the hardware, it's the software. So we spent 2 years with users in the slums in India, in the favelas in Rio de Janeiro, talking to users, what exactly do you need? What would you like to have? And that's when we came about with both the software, which is really the soul of the product, and also the hardware. In terms of the hardware, we're trying to bring the price as low as possible. This is an ARM-based computer, $79 entry point. We can access to those people who are really at the edge, and refugee camps, Haiti, all those places, so they can afford the hardware.
There are going to be members of our audience who are saying, I've heard that the poor people all have mobile phones, and that's how they get their internet. But that's not really the case, is it?
Well, even if they have phones, not necessarily as smartphones, they are feature phones. That's number one. But even more than that, I would tell those your audience, have you tried to write a resume in a tablet, let alone a phone? Have you tried to do an Excel worksheet or something in a phone? I mean, it's okay to view, to consume information, maybe change one cell or two, but it's very difficult to produce information. And imagine a kid making his homework on a phone.
Thank you again for sharing your vision for the next billion people. Leo, back to you in the studio, and hopefully you've received your Endless Mini.
Actually, Robert, you brought it. And that's great.
That's a good run.
Right? Yeah, you're a fast worker. You know, it's interesting because one laptop per child was trying to get the price down to $100
yes.
for a laptop, and they had a hard time doing that. That's how far we've come, $79. Now, you still have to have, it doesn't come with a keyboard or mouse, or does it?
No. So, yeah, you would have to find
a keyboard, a mouse.
USB keyboard, USB mouse.
And then a screen, and I guess it's designed to work with any TV.
Precisely. But the big thing about this is not just the cost. It was the recognition that where these computers are going to be used,
they're betting they're not going to have broadband, or at least consistent
broadband.
That I
find interesting as well.
Right.
So they come with stuff loaded on it.
Precisely. So, for example...
This is the interface right here.
This is a Linux computer? It is a Linux computer. It's not the fastest thing on the planet, but so if you go to open up an internet browser and it's not connected at the moment, it will tell you, look, you're not connected to the internet, but then you can go ahead and load the different apps. It has a word processor. It has a spreadsheet. It has different things that you can do offline. And here's...
This is funny. This is the opposite of Mark Zuckerberg's Internet.org, where they give you free, free internet with a limited number of sites. This is, there's no internet, but we have lots of it. Said encyclopedia? Is that Wikipedia or what is that on there?
That will depend because this is the other big selling point of this. When you do have internet connectivity, so if you bring it into an area that will have Wi-Fi, if you're able to actually get it connected, it will cache some of the most popular content. So you can
so it updates itself when it can get online.
Absolutely. So it'll update the news sites that you go to. It'll update the entries that you actually wanted to see in Wikipedia so that the next time you go to look at it, it will be inside the device.
Interesting. Photo editor, virtual school, music, a word processor called Writer. It has some games, some media. What is the virtual school?
The virtual school was one of the ideas that they were playing with. And the idea is, can we make a device that they could give to students where you could load up lessons and things that they might want to learn even beyond the standard curriculum and get it into the device automatically? And that's exactly what you can do here. Now, the idea is this will be updated. As you go along and as you develop curriculum, you can add new tabs.
But it does come with hundreds of videos.
Absolutely. They're getting all of this off the internet, and they're creating a device that gives the internet to people who don't actually have the internet. I love the concept.
Yeah. Is it HDMI out? Does it require? No, there's component as well.
Yeah, there's component. You got RCA composite out. You got Ethernet. You got HDMI. You've got USB and power. It's actually pretty basic, but it covers all the bases. If you've got an HDMI set, you can use it. If you've got one of those old TVs, you can hook it up to the RCA.
Right. $79.
$79.
Okay. Is that available now?
I believe so. Right. Yeah. The shipping now.
Okay, and for $99, you get more RAM, more storage, and you get Wi-Fi.
The built-in Wi-Fi.
That's kind of cool. That wasn't the only thing you saw. Here's a computer that costs even less, the Raspberry Pi 3.
Excited by this.
Yeah.
I have been playing with Raspberry Pi for the longest time. In fact, on KnowHow, we built an arcade emulator with this. This was the Raspberry Pi 1.
That was the original. Wow.
And they've been upgrading the specs from the 1 and then the B, and this is the 2, and now we've got the 3. And the 3, if you...
One thing that I love that they did with the 3, it's the same form factor, so it's going to fit in the case I have. It's going to fit with the GPIO ribbons I have. I don't have to get anything new to support it.
Exactly. If you've been tinkering and you've made yourself a cable harness, or if you've 3D printed yourself a case, the 3 and the 2 are identical.
Same outputs, everything. They've just improved the processor. They've added a Wi-Fi AC chip.
So it's 2 to 4 times faster than the 2, which was itself...
What? How much faster?
2 to 4 times faster.
Holy cow.
And the 2 was 5 times faster than the 1. All the ports are in the same spot. But the big change, and the one that really has me excited, is this. You can't really tell, but that's really the only difference. This is an onboard antenna for the Wi-Fi, 802.11n, plus Bluetooth and Bluetooth LE.
So I don't, because I've been adding a USB Wi-Fi dongle to mine.
Right.
So I don't have to do that.
So that's what I had to do here. Yeah. I've got one for Wi-Fi and I've got one for the
Bluetooth
keyboard and mouse. Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So on this, it's all built in, which will allow me to make much cleaner enclosures. I don't have to have all that stuff plugged in. Yeah. It's just on the board.
This is exciting.
It is very exciting. And, you know, pair it with something like this. This is the official, 7-inch Raspberry Pi touchscreen.
This is really pretty cool.
And this is pretty cool. And you know what? This does work quite well.
You're running Raspbian, which is their version of Debian.
This is Raspbian. This will run the Twit website. And this is the 2. I'm going to upgrade this to the 3, and it's going to be so much faster. It's nice. It's snappy. And because it's designed to be modular, so for example, I've 3D printed some stand legs for this.
Nice.
I'm going to be using this as a project computer. I've got one design already that it's designed to screw in underneath a countertop in the kitchen, and then it will swing out, and it will be like your recipe computer.
Very, very cool. Same price, $35.
$35.
Double the power, lots more features, and Boy, and we interviewed him on Triangulation some years ago. Big props to Eben Upton,
oh, yes.
who's had the vision. You got to talk to him in Barcelona.
I did.
Let's take a look at that video.
Now, for the folks who may not know a lot about your backstory, you are a consummate geek. You are a man of electronics, born and bred through and through. You have a BA in physics and engineering from the University of Cambridge. You have a diploma in computer science from Cambridge as well, and then a PhD from the computer laboratory over at the University of Cambridge. So you really live this. This wasn't just something that you did on a whim. This was something that you've been studying and dreaming about for decades, really.
Yeah, so this is I think goes all the way back to all the way back at least to the age of 8 when I first got my hands on a computer I could program, which I actually have one of here on my desk, not the one that I had when I was a kid, but the same model I have here on my desk. But I'm 37 now, so this is 29 years in the making.
Where do you want this to go? Where would you like to see Raspberry Pi next year?
I think you can break it down into two sides. You can break it down into we're a charity, we're a not for profit, and so if you look at the not for profit, the educational side, what I hope is that we're able to bring. We've had quite a lot of success now in the UK in teaching people to program, in establishing awareness that the lack of programming skills is a problem, and in producing materials and teacher training that can be that can be used to do something about this problem. My hope for the charity, for the foundation over the next year, is that we can start to bring some of that to other countries, in particular to North America. North America is our largest market for Raspberry Pi, and yet until very recently, we've done very little charitable work in North America. Last weekend, we actually ran our first teacher training event in the Bay Area with the Computer History Museum. And so I'm kind of hoping we're going to see a lot more of that in the U.S., it's kind of replicating some of the programs we've had in the UK and customizing them for the US. So that's kind of the charitable side. On the technical side, we sold about 3 million Raspberry Pis in 2015. It'd be good to get north of 4 million this year. That'd be good. That'd be good, healthy growth.
Thank you very much for joining us. And thank you for sharing all of this. And congratulations on your 4th anniversary. If people wanted to find out more about the Raspberry Pi Foundation, as you said, it is a charity, where could they go online to read about who you are, what your mission is, and more about how you're trying to bring affordable computing to the world?
So we have a website at raspberrypi.org, www.raspberrypi.org. We have a blog, which we try to maintain. We try to post something new every day. Either something we're doing or these days more frequently something somebody else is doing with the Pi, whether it's a hobbyist or whether it's an educational organization. We have a forum which we work very hard to make approachable. So yeah, you know, we would if you know nothing about computing and you'd like to get involved, we would encourage you to come to the forum because we work very hard. There is no such thing as a stupid question on the Raspberry Pi forums. So come and check it out.
Mr. Upton, it has been an absolute pleasure to speak with you. Again, thank you for your tech. And folks, if you're looking for the latest and greatest in geekness, you got to think about a Pi.
The thing to understand about the Raspberry Pi is it's really just a computer. It's just a very inexpensive $35 computer. But it runs a variety of operating systems. The preferred one is Raspbian, but there are other choices. It will work with any USB mouse and keyboard. Works with any HDMI monitor. So it's just an inexpensive computer. It's not like an Arduino, which is like a kit device.
Precisely.
This is a computer.
Yeah, the Arduino is an embedded device, and all the devices like it in that class are embedded devices. So when you turn it on, it's immediately on. It's immediately reading the firmware. Whereas this has an operating
system.
Boots up. It does boot up.
Yeah.
Now, it does have this GPIO header, which gives it functionality like an Arduino. I could hook up shields to it. I could add NFC functionality. I could use this to control Christmas lights, which does make it more than just, a standard low-cost computer. It does make it a bit more of a maker, hacker, DIYer thing. But I think the best way to think of a Raspi is a low-cost, low-power computer that can do everything from running a Linux distro to controlling home automation.
There's been a lot of demand for it. They had it ready the day they announced it, but in many places it was out of stock and then back in stock. What's the status right now? Is it easy to get?
It is easier to get than previous versions. You will remember you had them on Triangulation in 2012,
I think it was.
It's been a while. Right after that interview,
he went to DEF CON, or he was supposed to go to DEF CON. I was so
That's
excited.
Yeah.
I was going to meet him there, and I was going to get my hands on a Pi because it was impossible to get a Raspberry when the first one came out.
Yeah.
And they ended up not going because they didn't realize the tax structure for selling devices like that in Nevada was different, and they said we couldn't get enough of them, and we couldn't afford the taxes on them. So they didn't. This time, and he made a point in the interview, which we have a longer version on the New Screensavers channel, where he talks about how when they released the 3, they wanted it to be much, much smoother. So they made sure their suppliers had parts. They are running out, but the fact that millions have been able to buy them already they did a much better job.
It is a fun thing to play with and a great way to get a kid into programming.
Oh,
because the Raspbian distribution comes with a very special free version of Minecraft that you can program in 4th. In fact, we're going to interview the author of a book about doing that in a couple of weeks on triangulation. So just for that alone, I mean, to get an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old into computing with something like this is just a... For less than $100 when you put it all together, that's an amazing thing.
We used to have people ask about Python and what was a good way to get into Python. It was a hot language. But
there's not a better way to do it.
Yeah, Raspi is the best
way
to
introduce
someone. Comes with
Idle, Python 3, everything. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were able to get one. I'm glad you've been able to play with it. And I presume we'll see some projects on know-how.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, some stuff. There's some know-how stuff lying around here.
A few things,
You made that.
A little steampunk goggle. We could have done this with a Raspi, but instead we did it with an Arduino.
Yeah, but because it's simple. You don't need a big, full computer to do whatever that does. Stay tuned. If you want a computer with a little bit more oomph and a quite a bit larger price tag, the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine is coming up. Before that, though, Jason Howell from Launch Festival, Jason Calacanis' startup festival, he actually got to talk to Jason, and he has that interview. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Blue Apron. This is the place that just started me back on the track and making great healthy meals for me and my family, got me cooking again. And the reason I had gotten out of the habit is I just don't have time after work to, you know, go out, shop for ingredients, have a meal plan ready. It's so great when you get home and that Blue Apron box is on your doorstep and it's full of delicious stuff. There's three meals for two in each Blue Apron box. Refrigerated, everything's fresh, all the produce just picked from local farms, and inside a recipe for something amazing, something you may never have thought of cooking, and yet once you do, you now know how to do it. Things like triple pork maize men with roasted, I don't even know what that is, with roasted garlic and pea tips. I don't know what it is, but it sounds incredible. How about crispy brown butter gnocchi with Meyer lemon and Brussels sprouts? You make that in your kitchen. Let me tell you, for date night, you want to impress somebody. You say, I'm going to cook up a little something-something. And wow, you are a cook. And the thing is, you get the confidence once you've done it, once you've used these unusual ingredients, because they do always have some interesting stuff like farro. That's how I first learned how to cook farro, watermelon, radishes. Once you learn these recipes, you can do it again and again and again. Is it a cooking class? Is it a great way to get meals? There's something, you know, getting meals prepared by somebody else seems convenient, but they're never quite as good as the ones you make. And you can make these all in half an hour to 45 minutes. They're all about 500 to 700 calories. They're very healthful. And here's the best part, less than $10 a meal. Well, I'm going to get you your first two meals free, so how about that? Go to blueapron.com/twit. Stop heading to the fast food restaurant on your way home because you're just too tired to cook. Get some Blue Apron waiting for you on your doorstep. You can arrange it with your schedule. You can choose the meals you want, the same, never the same menu twice. I love that. blueapron.com/twit. Your first two meals are absolutely free. More of your tech questions coming up, but first Jason Snell with a tip on how to find a password that your computer remembers but you have forgotten.
Hi there, I'm Jason Snell. Have you ever been somewhere and your computer or phone is on the Wi-Fi? You know you've been on this Wi-Fi before, but then somebody asks you, "Hey, buddy, do you know the Wi-Fi password?" And you say, "I have no idea, even though my computer's on the Wi-Fi." If you've got your Mac with you, you can actually look it up. And the way you do that is by using a special utility that you'll find in your utilities folder. Go there and open the keychain utility. And then search for the name of the access point that you're connected to. You should be able to click a button that says Reveal Password. Enter in your password for your computer, and it'll show you in plain text the password for that network. then you can tell your friend, if they, assuming they look like a reasonable person who's not going to destroy the Wi-Fi network, you can tell them the password and they can get on the network too. For more information about stuff like this and other Mac-related things, visit my website at sixcolors.com.
And, of course, Jason's been on this show, and he's a regular on the Twit and Mac Break Weekly. We just love Jason Snell. All right, are you ready?
You know, I don't know if I can handle the awesomeness, but hit me, Leo.
It's time for the ultimate virtual gaming machine. Oh, we're building one sexy beast. Ryan Shroud is back with PC Perspective as we continue our build in the ultimate gaming machine, in this case, the ultimate virtual reality gaming machine, because we're building this for Oculus Rift and everything else. Last week I said the game I'm most looking forward to this year is No Man's Sky. And I bet you that'll be a VR title. You'd be crazy not to make that a VR title. And I'm hoping this will play it beautifully. So, Ryan, welcome back from PC Perspective and This Week in Computer Hardware. We have a Asus motherboard, an Intel Core i7 processor. We have decided to put in an NVIDIA 980 Ti Strix card from Asus. The Strix line is their quiet line. And you can see why quiet might be important with a card that's actually as big as the motherboard. But now, you're not going to run it like that. You got to put it in a case. So we unveil the case. It's just the monolith from 2001, A Space Odyssey. Which case did you... Actually, this is beautiful. What case did you pick and why?
This is from a company that a lot of people might not know of. It's from a company called Fantex. And then the series is called Enthu Evolve, right? So it's the Fantex Enthu Evolve. It's spelled kind of oddly, so I'll leave it for you guys to put up on a lower third or something like that.
Yeah.
But it is... cases are interesting, right? Because it's a very personal decision. What do you like? What styling do you appreciate? Because any metal square box will work, right, essentially, for a case. It's just about how fancy you want to get and then what kind of styling you want. I love the idea of having a window.
That's really nice. You don't have to open it up. And especially because of the motherboard we got, the Asus has lots of readouts and lights and stuff. It's really designed for a case where you can see it working, right?
Yep. It is. I really like the front of this. I like the way it looks. I like the way the doors open up and come off. The doors actually kind of open in a...
I think this is another... To me, this is the number one feature for any case is ease of access. And the fact that this plexiglass door swings open, giving me full access to the drive base, to the motherboard, that's exactly how it should be. I love this.
And actually, the door will come off of the hinges as well. So if you like are setting it on its side, on the table to work on it, you don't have to worry about it like flexing or anything.
Good. Yeah, you just pull them right off the hinges like that. Yeah.
Yep, just like that.
Good. Oh, man, is this pretty. Now, of course, this doesn't come with a power supply.
No.
So we have to buy a power supply. And we're going to go for the power supply. We're going to go with Corsair, right?
Yep. Oh, no, that's the cooler.
That's the cooler?
Yeah.
Here we go. EVGA's Supernova 750P2 Platinum Power, 750 watts. Now, one thing I found out early on when I was building PCs is that the wattage of the power supply is just a best guess. A good power supply, like from PC Power and Cooling, will let you know, will really be that power. Are EVGA good in that respect?
They are. We picked this power supply because we had done a review of this, and you can get all 750 watts out of it. It actually will spike a little bit higher if you need to.
As it should, yeah.
And it's a platinum power supply, which is the second highest, performance efficiency rating. So it will run at 92% efficiency.
Oh, is it green? Not really. 750 watts.
It's really green. But it is as green as you can get for that kind of wattage.
Look at the braided cables.
Yep, it's completely modular, which I love. Makes installation easy. You can route all the cables, in either direction, and then connect it up to the power supply, and then whatever device you're connecting it to after the fact.
And look at all the cables. You'll never have to buy another cable. This is
right.
How many devices can I attach to this sucker?
I have that list here. You can. It has 4 8-pin and 2 6-pin PCI connectors. So for graphics cards, essentially, it has 10 SATA connectors. Jeez. 4 Molex connectors, the old 4-pin, and it still has 1 floppy connector too. Should that be necessary?
A floppy connector. But yeah. I have to say, I know that you shouldn't judge a power supply by this, but those braided cables really look sweet, and that's going to make this look so So nice. You said it's modular. What does that mean?
So all the cables are disconnected from the power supply. You don't have any cables already attached to the power supply. So if you take it out of the...
No extra cables in the box, just the cables you need.
Right. Well, and what you'll see is when you take it out of the little bag there, you'll see the connectors for it. So you only connect the cables that you need. You don't have to. You don't connect all of the cables to it. It'll just make the inside of your case messy.
Right.
So if you're like, okay, I've only got one GPU, so I only need two of the PCI power cables, and boom, you only install those two and you're done.
And that is a monster muffin fan on the top of it. That's good because the bigger the fan, the quieter, right?
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
So this is going to be a fairly quiet, stable...
We picked one that's, you know, 750 watts, so it's more than enough power should you want to add a second GTX 980
How do you calculate the wattage? You just add up the requirements of each component?
That's pretty much what you do. There are a couple of really good resources. EVGA, actually, on their website, has a power supply calculator where you go tell it what processor you're going to use, if you're going to overclock, what graphics cards, and it will tell you, like, here's what the minimum power supply you should get. And the general rule is, you know, you take the maximum power draw of each component, add 20% to everything, and that's kind of the wattage you go for. So you have a little bit of headroom.
It's really funny because it not only comes with a bag for the power supply, in case you want to travel with it, it comes with a bag for all the cables.
But you're going to have extra.
Yeah, you have extra cables. You may need these later, somewhere to put them. That's nice.
Yep.
What know, this just little touches like that just kind of make me happy. I mean, it shows some class. It shows that they've got some style here.
The PC, the DIY PC industry has it's growing up, right? So the people who do this are now specifically doing this. People don't do this to save money necessarily anymore. They're doing it because they like to do it. So that's when you start to get some of those touches in there.
It should. And it's nice pebbled steel surface there. That is a beautiful power supply. And since the power supply can really impact reliability of the PC, I don't think you should stint on that. In fact, cases that come with built-in power supplies usually have the cheapest power supply possible. And that's something that people forget. That can really be the source of a lot of problems on a PC, is an unreliable power supply.
All right. Agreed.
Let's talk about cooling now, because you've kind of let the cat out of the bag, or I did. Our cooler, we're not going to use passive cooling, not just a bunch of fans.
Right.
This is liquid cooling?
This is a Corsair H100i GTX. It is considered a self-contained water cooler. So basically that means it is water cooling without all the mess of setup and plumbing and trying to fill and then clear out air bubbles and all that stuff.
Always makes me so nervous because water and PCs don't mix. So I love the idea of a sealed subsystem that I don't have to mess with. And I never have to refill it or anything?
Correct. Nope. And they've done,
Is it actual water, H2O, in there?
It is water with some additives to kind of prevent... mildew and all that type of stuff from building.
Yeah, as it should be. So this is going to be the big cooling unit, which is really just a radiator.
Yep.
The
radiator will attach to the top of the inside the case. And then the other part connected there is the water block and pump that will affix to the processor itself.
So this is going to go on the CPU.
Yep.
Wow, look at that.
It's got some pre-applied thermal paste. Some people will scrape that off and put their own on. I think that's perfectly fine to use the one that comes with it.
Well, especially since people tend to be over-liberal with paste. It's hard to get it just right. You don't want to use too much or too little. And then there's the fan with, that's gonna radiate a lot of heat. And that's going to sit next to a fan in the case, I presume, so it gets the maximum airflow over it.
There are two fans in the box as well.
Oh, all right.
That you will attach. So this is a 240-millimeter radiator, so it's two 120-millimeter fans, right?
This is beautiful, I have to say.
Now, it is good looking.
Do you have to consider this when you're buying the case? I guess you do.
You do. I would say if you're getting a full size ATX case in general, I would say you're going to have support for both single and dual radiator coolers like this, but it's always good to check and make sure. And that's something that cases are definitely they're talking about. They're advertising what their capabilities are now, right? Because it's something that people would be interested in.
You know, what's great is there are no little fans in this whole case. Everything is big. Even in the case, it's a big fan. That's good because you're not going to get whiny little noises. You're going to get quiet operation, even though there are going to be quite a few fans running on this thing.
Yep. Yep. And this has built-in kind of like fan control, right? So it will...
Yeah, I see the, when the things connectors go up here. So we'll have sensors. We'll know how hot everything yep. is. All the fans will be... Can we actually turn them up or will they just go automatically? Yep.
I mean, you can set a specific speed, but it's better to let the PWM, kind of like the power right. management, deal with it.
Right.
I think the water block there even has an LED light that you can change the color to software.
Of course it does. Yes. Of course it does. Oh, man, is this going to be beautiful? So we're going to get going pretty soon because I think there's some assembly required at this point.
It is time to start putting things together. Not just the case, you can actually start down that road.
Who wants to? Do I get to do that or does somebody else get the honors? I'm kind of looking forward to it. Let's get our powered screwdriver, and next week we're going to add RAM. What else do we have to do? Oh, storage is going to be a big deal. We've got to find a nice drive, big capacity, high speed. But we're getting close. This is the fifth component, and John has just handed me my power tool. I am that is a good screwdriver. Even the screwdrivers have gotten better, haven't they? Wow. Look at that. Ryan Shrout, you'll find out more about all of the hardware they recommend, their reviews of everything at PCPer.com. Don't forget the HW leaderboard. Much of this is on the HW leaderboard, I think, right? Mm-hmm. We're close to the dream machine.
Yep, getting up there.
Yep. And, of course, This Week in Computer Hardware, he does with Patrick Norton every Thursday on this very same network. Ryan, thanks so much. This is now starting to get pretty darn exciting. This is going to be a beautiful PC. I can't wait. Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, guys.
So this is enough to microwave probably... Nonstop every
pretty much.
Wow.
I gotta ask you this because way before I joined Twit and I was covering CES on my own doing one shots, there used to be this charity event, Tiger Direct.
It was
did that one.
Oh
right?
yeah, the race, build your own PC race. That was crazy. They would give you all the components, lay them out, and then they'd start a stopwatch, and say, okay, first person to boot wins money for their charity. I can't remember how I did on that. I was pretty good at that. Yeah. It's not a hard thing to do. Frankly, putting a PC together is kind of like building Legos.
You've done it so many times, it's muscle memory. They may change a few of the design pieces, but you know what has to go in.
In a little bit, I think next week we're doing RAM. Yeah, we've pre-recorded, as you can see, some of these to fit in with the Ryan Shrout's schedule. I think I put the RAM in backwards. Watch carefully. I think I put the RAM in backwards. He even says something like, now, make sure that the RAM key matches the key on the slot. Oh, yeah, no problem.
No, you just push harder. Yeah. It will go in.
Anyway, I think I figured that out before too long, and we will not have backwards RAM in the final build. It's fun, though, to see. Just if you're willing to spend $5,000, you can get some pretty nice components nowadays.
Beautiful components.
They've really gotten good. Our show today, we got to pay for that, by the way, by ads from Squarespace. Squarespace has paid for a little bit around here. We've been with them since almost the beginning when Anthony Castellana came out of college. He was trying to write, as is often the case, a better web hosting platform. And he came up with the best hardware and the best software. We're now, I think, at the sixth iteration of Squarespace software. And by the way, you can't separate the software from the server. They go hand in hand. And that's one of the secret sauces at Squarespace, is that the server software is tightly integrated with a content management system. So when more people hit your site, it spins up more instances. It's able to get more CPU and more bandwidth behind it. That's why a Squarespace site never goes down. It's a beautiful marriage of the best server stuff with the best client-side stuff. And you're going to love the templates and how easy it is to use. You start with one of these state-of-the-art templates, the best designers and the best engineers. So the design is gorgeous. You're going to be able to customize it beautifully, drag and drop, point and click, make it just look exactly like what you want. But the engineering behind it is just as important. Every site is mobile responsive. Every site comes with e-commerce. The best, you know, when you get to look at the code, and you can, by the way, if you're a developer, there's a developer level you can do, and you can look at the code and you'll see, oh, man, these guys know what they're doing. That's why your site is so good. It works so well. You'll get a free custom domain name when you sign up for a year. I recommend you do that. If you want to do commerce, there's nothing better than Squarespace Commerce. In fact, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's the only platform that makes your store look like the rest of your site. It's not like something hanging off the side. You don't exit out to some cart. It's all designed the same. It's all part of the same template and the same aesthetics that you apply to it. And I like that. You feel like it's integrated in beautifully. And I know you're an artist, whether you're building bicycles, whether you're fixing plumbing, whether you're building furniture or making music, you're an artist. And your site should look like your art. Actually, you saw an engagement site, too. It's great for getting married, for a new baby, for a life change. A wonderful way to share your love and your joy with the world. I think Squarespace is amazing. You can try it free right now. Go to squarespace.com. Use our offer code. When you buy, you don't need this when you try. But when you buy, use our offer code NSS so you get 10% off. And you'll show your support for our show. Squarespace, you really should. It's awesome. Squarespace.com. Squarespace, you should. You should. All right. Jason Howell got to go to the Launch Festival. It's Jason Calacanis' really kind of amazing startup festival. And he got to talk to the man himself, Jason Calacanis. Here's his interview.
Hey, everyone. I'm here at Launch SF with, well, someone who's no stranger to the TWiT Network, Jason Calacanis.
Thanks for having me. It's great to have TWiT out here amongst us at the Launch Festival. Thank you for coming.
Oh, absolutely. Happy to be here. This is just, you know, there's a buzz and energy in the air. Everybody's super excited to be here because they have reason to be, because they're showing off kind of the things that they're doing. What are some of your highlights, would you say?
Robotics, huge this year. Drones, virtual reality, augmented reality, all those things are just huge. But some major highlights were the Hyperloop, obviously. You know, that is becoming reality much quicker than anybody anticipated. The other thing that's becoming reality much quicker than anybody anticipated is robotics. And the Launch Incubator had a company called Cafe X. And they emailed me and said, hey, we're big fans of your podcast, et cetera, yada, yada. And look at this video. I watched the video of this, like, robotic coffee machine. And I said, is that CGI? And they said, no, it's real. And I said, okay, I want you to come to my incubator. They said, how do we apply? I said, you were just accepted. And this robotic coffee machine lets you have four different types of beans. You could have Phil's coffee, you have Blue Bottle. And you order it on your phone, and as you're walking towards it, it knows how far you are. So if you did it up in your office, you're coming down, Bluetooth, beacons, the whole bit. You tell it when you want it, and then you walk up to a bay, you put your PIN number, and you get it. It's 60 times faster than waiting in line, and it's going to be a dollar cheaper. So better and faster and cheaper. And it's more consistent than a human. So it's the end of all barista employment. Unless you absolutely love making latte art, you can keep your job, of course. But for the rest of us, you know, the machine operates 23.5 hours a day.
Well, Jason Calacanis, thank you for the invite, and thank you for talking with us.
Yeah, have fun. Get back to the demo pit.
Now, you know what all those baristas are going to do when they're out of work. They're going to have startups, and there'll be more places for people to find more stuff at the Launch.
We welcome our robotic barista overlords.
There was a robot very much like that on the cruise ship that we went on that made your drinks.
Really?
The booze was hanging upside down.
Oh, yeah.
Robot arm would bring the cup up and fill it up with ice, and then push it out towards you. It was pretty cool.
It's entertainment. That's entertainment.
Yeah.
And a more consistent drink, I guess.
Consistent, yes. Yeah. And it was kind of fun. Afterwards, they'd spray out the cup. That's good. So did you, you know, Jason was the host of the new Screensavers a couple of weeks ago, and inadvertently leaked out what is now official. It's just he's going to do a reality show with Harvey Weinstein. It's about him and 12 startups. It's kind of like that Donald Trump. What was the name of that? The Apprentice?
I can't remember.
It's kind of like the
candidate.
Candidate.
It was called.
It's kind of like he's going to be the master, and then they're going to have 12 different startups. By the end, only one wins, and they like a massive $1 million prize. And it's kind of interesting. So good for Jason.
So anyone who has ever wanted to know what the life of a VC is like, that's the show to watch.
No, I don't think
no.
so.
No.
But, you know, I have a feeling Jason might have some aspirations in the political arena, too. I'd vote for him. He's a great guy.
Mayor Jason?
Are you ready for the mailbag?
Let's do it.
Here it comes.
Ow!
The mail. No. They knew Father Robert was here, and they prepared some pie for you.
Is it raspberry pie?
It's raspberry.
Okay, I will take a slice
How
of raspberry.
Nice of them to do that. One, they knew me. Let's see here. I think I'm going to give you this one.
All right. Well,
you're actually eating that?
Well, it's kind of flaky, so maybe not.
I think it's been there for a while. What is your question there?
My question comes from Eric, who writes, "Hi, Leo.
I live out in the sticks. Verizon only has DSL, and I'm receiving 1 meg. There are no other internet providers. What do you think of HughesNet, or is there another alternative?
HughesNet is the satellite option. There's actually a better one, I think, than HughesNet, which is from Exceed. It's a Wild Blue. And it's much faster. We've played with it a little bit, but all satellite internet has the same kind of failings. One, you've got to buy expensive equipment because you have to buy a dish or at least rent one and set that up. The box is complicated. The other is that the satellites are distant, so there's inevitably latency. That is the time between when you send a signal up, it gets to the satellite, goes back down to the internet because it has its own internet connection somewhere, comes back up to the satellite, comes back down to you. That could be as long as a second. And you'll really notice that in real-time gaming, it's not good for gaming.
No, it's useless
for
gaming.
Or Skype. You know, you hate it when you have those satellite phone calls and you say, so tell me, how is it in Abu Dhabi? It's fine, Jake! And, you know, we've seen that, and that's kind of what you're going to get.
Yeah.
It's not fun for a Skype call. So, but it's fine for simple surfing and email. And for many people who do live well away from any other form of internet, it might be the only choice. I would look at Wild Blue by Exceed. But the other thing that's going to start springing up now, and you might see, is 4G providers like Verizon offering you access to their high-speed cell towers. So if you have LTE in your area, check with the carrier, because they often offer home LTE. It's different pricing. You don't have the bandwidth caps that you have with your cell phone based LTE, but it might be worth finding out if that's available, because often that's more solid. The latency is not bad at all. It's just like regular internet connection. It seems like it would be a better choice.
Right.
Satellite is expensive and laggy.
Terrestrial wireless is always going to be better than satellite. And one of the things to remember is in the latest round of spectrum auctions, both Verizon and AT&T took up huge chunks of spectrum, and one of the stipulations that they signed off on is that they will get the spectrum, but they have to deploy to rural areas.
Yeah.
Now,
that's right. I'm glad the FCC is doing that.
It's very vague as to what that means and what the time frame is, but they are making an effort to get out into, as the caller said, the sticks.
It's the trade-off between you living in a beautiful area, but the population density is very low, and you can understand why somebody's not going to trench out, put in at very great cost, put in wiring for five people. You're never going to make that money back. So there's just the economics of it are bad. It's going to take a government subsidy. I think much the same way we had the same problem in the 20s when electricity started to come into this country. But nobody was electrifying rural areas because it just wasn't worth the money. You couldn't make your money back. And that's why the Tennessee Valley Authority and other rural electrification projects were created by the federal government. It was a way to put people to work, because it was the Great Depression, but also to bring electricity even to the most rural areas. And we still have electricity. I think the internet's very similar. It's something that everybody should have access to, even in the most rural areas. But it's going to take something like a government subsidy, because it's just not good business.
And us old-timers who used to actually have landlines, and I know there are some people in our audience who have never had a landline, but we used to pay a rural fee.
Right.
This tack on, and the idea was the telcos would use that to deploy to these underserved areas.
Right.
Well, that went away, but now they've got a new fee for deploying wireless.
Right.
And I think we've really seen, especially at Mobile World Congress, we saw with the development of some 5G standards that not only do they work, but they are incredibly fast and they're great for long haul. So hopefully those will start making it out in the market, and the price for deploying out to the sticks will drop.
Yeah, wireless is really the long-term future for this. You just can't bring cable or wire out to these distant places. It's just too expensive. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, and there's these projects like the Google Project Loon and Facebook's drones, and they're projects. Elon Musk says he wants to launch, 280, something like that, geostationary low-Earth orbit satellites to provide high-speed internet access to every corner of the world. I'm hoping that happens, because I want to live somewhere beautiful and rural. We were just up in Mendocino County. It's gorgeous. But it's not an option for me, because I have to have high-speed internet wherever I am.
Right. And you can't count on hitting the lottery and having Google decide that that's going to be where they run their fiber.
Here's another one. Thanks for your help every week. Well, you're very welcome. We love doing it. You've saved my butt many a time, says Michael. You travel all the time. Please discuss what you use to charge your electronics overseas. You're a big traveler,
Yes.
I know. I'm heading to Western Europe, Great Britain, France, and the Netherlands for the first time in 20 years. No idea how to charge my phone, camera, and a tablet, all of which are from different manufacturers. Thanks for the help, Michael. The good news there is that almost all modern consumer electronics is designed to work everywhere in the world.
They're international.
So there's two different things you have to consider. There's the physical plug layout, which varies widely. There's seven or eight standards. And then the other thing is the voltage. Here in the United States, we're 110 AC. In most of the rest of the world, it's 220 or 240. But if you look closely, and you might need a magnifying glass, but if you look closely at the power supply for your tablet and for your phone, in almost every case, it's going to say 110-240. It's going to work as long as you have the right physical plug, and that's what Father Robert's got.
Right. So Carson and I both brought international adapters to Barcelona, and both of us promptly destroyed them. Mine was actually faulty, and I think Carson's got crushed. So luckily, they were giving these out in the press room. This is a standard, cheap, international thing. You can combine this in different ways to get all the different types of plugs.
So this is this is a standard European. If you're in the three countries you're in, you're going to probably see these two-prong plugs like this.
And then you can combine
that. This is the UK. This is the craziest plug you've ever seen. So in Great Britain, there's plugs like that. Mm-hmm. Although more and more I'm seeing standard plugs that look a little bit like, yeah, there you go. There's the variety. But look, but this is a universal socket. And I'm seeing in a lot of hotels anyway as we travel around the world, this socket that will handle almost any kind of a plug, which is a good way to do it.
UK, this one's my favorite.
Which one is that?
So this,
oh, that's
this way,
crazy Korean
that's,
plug.
That's American, Korean, and Australian,
yeah.
Just depending on which way you slant that.
They're slanted. That does all three.
It does.
So with these adapters, you can get every kind of plug. And then, but it's very important, for every device you're going to plug in, check to make sure it's 110 to 240. And I'll tell you why. I had a battery charger that I don't know where I got it. It must have been, you know, an old one that only did 110.
Ooh.
I didn't notice that because it's very fine print. You know, you get your magnifying glass. So I took it. So the first place we stopped was Venice, Italy. The beautiful old monastery, 800-year-old hotel. Plug in my battery charger. Boom.
Smoke.
No, the room lights went out. I opened the door. The whole floor is out. I call downstairs and say, I think the power went out. And they say, okay, we'll fix it. It's commonplace in Italy. So they fixed it. I still didn't cotton to the fact that I was doing it. Get on the boat. We're going on a cruise ship. Plug in the same charger. Boom. There's no lights in the cabin. I call upstairs to the captain. I say, I'm not getting any power. We'll send the engineer down. I get to Istanbul. In beautiful Turkey. Get in a nice hotel. It's a nice Mandarin fancy hotel. Once again, plug in. You'd think I'd learn. Three times I blew all the power out. Finally, I thought, you know, maybe it's this. I looked and, oh, 110 only. So it may smoke because it's putting more voltage into it. But what really was happening, I think, is I was drawing so much voltage through this old device from the hotel that to protect me, it blew the circuit.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Be very careful. Make sure you can do 110 to 240.
So you were causing blackouts across Europe.
Yes.
I like that. That's good stuff.
Don't do like Leo did.
Now, that will get you into the plug. But he also said he was a little concerned because he carries a lot of devices. He's got his tablet, his phone.
Almost
his
all
camera.
These devices are sold worldwide. So the
precisely.
Good news is almost all of them are 110.
Yes, yes. But I understand what he's coming from, where he doesn't want to carry five different chargers. No one wants to carry five different chargers. Which is why when I travel international, I actually carry this.
What's that?
This is a
big battery.
This is a big old battery. This is their 18,000 version. It's an energy to go. And now the nice thing about this is it has multiple outputs. So I've got 12 volt, I've got 5 volt, and I've got 19 volt. So this will charge my tablet, my phone, my laptop. And if I combine it with this, so that's from Energizer, but this is from Energy, INERGIE. This gives me the ability to charge from 110 to 240 from planes, from cars. It gives me two high-power USB ports with which I can charge my phone, my tablet, et cetera, et cetera. So all together, this little bag will charge all my devices. It's the only adapter I carry. I don't carry one for my laptop, for my tablet, for my phone, for my camera. Just this one bag.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, there are several different all-in-one applications like this. And if I didn't want the extra battery power, I could actually just leave this behind. But I like the ability to charge even when I don't have access to an outlet.
Right. Right. Yeah. Very good. Yeah, those, these battery packs now are ubiquitous. I carry
them they're everywhere.
All the time. They're great. Very nice to have. Yeah. So there you go. Don't worry. Don't freak out. The good news is in the 20 years since you've been to Europe, it's gotten much easier. And in most cases, all the electronics you have are going to do just fine as long as you have the right connector. And you know, you're at the airport, you can pick up an adapter. There's plenty of places you can get the adapter. Another good tip is go down to the hotel front desk. They'll have more than a few adapters.
And the last good tip is if you are in Europe and there's a blackout, there's a good chance Leo's staying
Leo's
in the hotel.
Not far away. you know, I just, it's like, didn't you look? Why didn't I think?
No. It's the vacation mindset.
When the same thing happens over and over to you, maybe you're the problem. That's the lesson.
No, it's just that other guy who keeps following you. I don't know why he keeps doing it. But
Father Robert, it's always a pleasure doing this show with you, and it's great having you around. Robert hosts some of the best shows on the TWiT network. Of course, Know How, which I love, twice weekly now.
Twice a week, yes.
So they're two different kind of styles, right?
Yes. So on Thursday, we have Know How Maker. And that's, we're building things, 3D printing, we're soldering things together, quadcopters, little Arduino projects. On Monday, it's Know-How DIY, and that's more things like, well, can you calibrate your TV? Can you set up a gaming computer? Do you know how to set up your router to poke the holes so that you can get the proper communication to your network cameras? Things like that. So we've got a little something for everyone. No matter where you are on the tech geek spectrum, either building or just putting things together, you'll find something at Know-How.
It's one of the best shows we do with Brian Burnett, your co-host there, who is our technical director for this show. And, of course, this week in Enterprise Tech.
Yes.
Chibert.
And Curtis Franklin.
And Curtis.
And Lou Maresca. Yeah.
And Lou is now on
He is now one of our regular co-hosts.
I'm so happy to hear that.
We get to cover all the latest and greatest in the Enterprise.
Yep. This week in Enterprise Tech. Watch every week. Thank you, Robert. Thank you all for being here. We do the new Screensavers every Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC. Please join us live. But if you can't, on demand of every show, Robert's shows, my shows, Tech News Tonight, Tech News Today, all the shows available on our website. Just go to twit.tv. In this case, twit.tv/NSS for the new Screensavers. Or subscribe in every podcatcher, on every app. We've got Twit apps everywhere, but there's podcast apps for everything. Just find the show and make sure you don't miss one, because we don't want to miss you. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.